Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy connecting the light. My guest today is Tony Topping, who lives in Selby, Yorkshire in England, and he has had a long history of paranormal experiences from childhood. And for him, it really kicked off in 1996 when, having moved back to Selby from London, he began to have strange lights and objects flying over his home. So, welcome to the programme, Tony.
Oh, good evening, Mike. And it's Mike, isn't it? Do you like to be called Mike?
I am, yes.
Michael. good evening. Nice to be on the show, matey. Anyway, nice to join you. It's been quite a roller coaster ride, as you would describe. In fact, it's been to hell and back again, and it's still ongoing. Yeah. You know, I think that in the waking up of the consciousness of humanity. That's awakening at the moment, the spiritual awakening that's occurring, the ferocity of trying to prevent it cannot be underestimated. And I think that no kind of material written in the spiritual or New Age books can show the ferocity of the force that is preventing this awakening and what it can do. And a lot of people are not prepared for that, and we need to be, I think, as a race, as a human race, we need to be. And I think that's what's centred around the beginning of my experiences, you know, in 1996.
Right. Now, do you feel there's any connection with your earlier history of paranormal experiences to your interest in UFOs? Does it link in any way?
Yes, there was. I mean, I had my paranormal experiences at the age of two, you know, when I had something walk through a wall. You know, well, I had a group of things walk through a wall. If you can imagine, I can see it now. I'm 2 years of age, and my memory is very photographic. 2 years of age, like, trying to explain to my father. Well, I'm actually screaming my head off because I can't talk, and I'm pointing, and I'm trying to explain what I've just seen, and I've just bit my tongue as well, so now my tongue's bleeding and all that kind of thing, and it's absolutely, you know, absolutely horrendous. 2 years of age trying to, you know, see that. And then, of course, you know, from the ages of about 7 to 10 years of age and up into teenage, you know, strange dreams, strange goings on. You know, at the age of 12, having demonic laughter in your bedroom, just horrific. You know, so that these forces are there, and they are kind of like hidden from view, but are in plain view. It's very clever. And so the battle has been nearly a lifetime. At the moment, Michael, I'm not perfect. I certainly won't tell people that I am in any way and that my experiences are because I'm a chosen one or anything like that. I feel I'm a man who's been caught up in a situation where, like Neo, somebody somewhere has chosen me, but I don't know who. Somebody somewhere has given me a red pill to swallow, but I don't know who, but they're there. And it seems quite intentional that I'm being shown all this. But my fuses are ready for blowing. I've had enough. If you could try and live night and day with bombardments, with mind control, you know, mind control kind of earth military, and then mind control beyond that, and then you're getting into kind of forces beyond human comprehension, you've got quite a hell of a roller coaster ride going on. And I'm on the verge of walking away from it all and just quitting. Quitting it altogether and trying to live a normal life. My fuses are ready for blowing, Mike. They really are.
Right. Now, do I take it you are aware of the disclosure program?
Yes, I am. Yes. The guy, that's Dr. Stephen Greer, isn't it?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, indeed. Who's currently charging $3,680 for people to see UFOs. Which I find, you know, staggering, just absolutely staggering that he's done that. I can't understand, like, why he's gone down that line. But I know, I mean, I'm a wholehearted fan of the Disclosure Project. I think that Dr. Greer did absolutely tremendous work and still is doing ongoing work. I admire him greatly. I'd just tell him to his face what I thought and see what he'd say, you know. So, yeah, I absolutely admire the guy, and he's been heavily discredited. Ferociously discredited, I feel. I don't know what your feelings are on it, Mike, but that's what I feel.
Well, he started his campaign, if I may call it that, in the year 2000, and I think he's done terrific work in the meantime to get so many people to come forward from very respectable, as you might call, sources, and built up this dossier of people that, given the chance, are prepared to tell you what they know, their proof about UFOs. Now, I don't think that's very far away, so I hope you'll last out.
Yeah, well, I hope so, Mike. I mean, it irritates me when you hear certain radio programs, I won't name them on your show, that go, Greer, they call him Greer when they speak about him. They'll go, Greer's done this, Greer's done that, we're sick of Greer, blah, blah. And what they don't realise, what I feel, is that none of them, Mike, were man enough to have the balls Stephen Greer had to do what he did. I mean, what people forget, Mike, and you may have been, I know you've had paranormal experiences yourself, what people forget when they're slagging off people like Dr. Greer or even me or any in the military who put themselves on the line is that we are putting our lives at risk for this information. Dr. Greer lost his assistant. The director of the CIA was floating down the river in a kayak. Numerous incidents of people going down with tumours and brain hemorrhages, UFO researchers, because the cover-up is sinister in the extreme. And it comes in many mirrors and many masks and presents itself in many ways as to the true nature of what it is. And it's quite tricky. So I greatly admire Stephen Greer for what he's done. And I think there was a central issue, Mike, regarding Project Camelot, where he was interviewed by Kerry and Bill, who seemed not to touch me with a barge pole. Perhaps I'm too hot to handle for them. But he was defending himself very well indeed over the issue of aliens being friendly, and his remarks saying that no aliens have been hostile to mankind. And there was a big heated discussion over that. And Dr. Greer's theme was that aliens are concerned about human beings weaponizing space. And what is fascinating, Mike, is during the course of my experiences, I would concur totally with that theme. That aliens are, or ETs, or the people in the objects, as I call them, who are quite advanced, learned people, are watching what we're doing, because it affects, you know, all is connected to all. And so there is a theme emerging that kind of like is concurrent with what Dr. Greer is saying and what he's doing. I don't agree with him 100% in what he says, but he's done some sterling work, hasn't he?
Absolutely, yes. And I think at the end of last year, there was some indication that if President Obama hadn't gone down that road, he was prepared to push it forward himself.
Yes. Yeah, oh, President Obama would have done. What is sinister about all this, Mike, is that should President Obama, who obviously would be in favour of disclosure, you know, there's a lot of conspiracy theories going around on the net about him and the Illuminati and all this kind of thing, which I'm quite conversant with. But I do feel that the president, should he move to kind of disclose, we'd have another Kennedy on our hands, because the rogue group that's in charge of this information and the forces behind it all would not want it disclosed to mankind. I do think that somebody somewhere is doing something that they shouldn't within the military-industrial complex. I think that's what Eisenhower was obviously warning us about. And that's what I feel with the disclosure at the moment and where it's heading. I think there will be a disclosure. I think there will be some form of disclosure from the Obama administration. I think that the people in the UFO objects, and this may sound a sweeping remark, feel that he is a man that they can do business with. But you have to know thy enemy, as they say, Mike.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right there. Now, just to go back to the beginning here, what was it that happened in the first instance when you noticed these strange lights and objects flying over your home? I mean, how did that develop?
That developed in Paddington in about 1996, where I was walking down Parade Street. I lived in London. It's a city that I dearly love, and I was walking down the street in Parade Street in Paddington, and across the kind of like junction into Edgware Road, this ball of light appeared like a car headlamp. It shone. It wasn't a plane. It shone very brightly, closed off, and I thought it was going to crash into a block of flats. It didn't. It didn't at all. It didn't crash into a block of flats. It just mysteriously vanished. In fact, 25 minutes before I was due to come on air with you, Mike, I had one come over the house. Now, there's an airspace ban over the UK at the moment, but one of them came over. That's no mistake in it. It just came over over the house, just nosing around as they do. So I've had this all my life, but 1996 was the time when it really kicked off in Paddington in Parade Street, and then it escalated from there. to the phenomenal goings on that we have at the moment, which are really just unbelievable. Many, many mirrors being projected at you to hide a reality from individuals and the human race in general.
It's quite funny, actually, that you appear to see so many UFOs, because I recall that when we made contact, you told me that you'd filmed an orange orb or UFO about 10 minutes before we spoke.
Yes, yes, indeed. I don't feel right discussing why it's happening. I don't feel right about that. I roughly know why it's happening, but it's very hard for listeners to take in. But I roughly know why it's happening. Some of us as human beings, in simple terms, have literally jumped the human matrix. We've become Neos in some way, and we've just jumped the human matrix because perhaps of who we once were, who our background was before we were maybe incarnate, in a spiritual sense, to who I am now on the phone. It all links back, bloodline thing. So that makes me unique. And anybody who's unique in that sense will have probably a heavy dose of UFO activity around them, more so than the average person.
Well, I hope that means, Tony, that you are in fact being protected from all these assaults on you.
No, it's very worrying, Michael. No, I'm not being protected, and yet I am. It's very worrying what I'm being exposed to. It's become recently, over the weeks, very, very worrying indeed, the sheer level of attack that's coming at me, involving a form of very soft harassment that makes you sleep, that makes you awake while asleep. Very subtle, very soft, very untraceable. But it's kind of like targeting, if you imagine that you are an information processor, the brain area is being targeted to shut you off. Obviously, it's hard to put into words, but that's exactly what's doing. And the attacks have gone through a worrying phase, a very worrying phase. They've become softer but more ferocious in the way that they are doing what they're doing. And I don't know why. The reason is constantly eluding me, but it's as if it is to prevent something or prevent me from doing something. But the trouble is when you're dealing with ETs and UFOs, time is totally different. You are forward in time, especially if you've been transported into another dimension, put back with no memory. You're transported forward in time of the human race and back again. It's complex, but that's the basic gist of it. You're left with the paranormal goings on that surround that. So what you've already done, even though they're trying to prevent, you've already done it. At some point in the proceedings. It's very matrix. I hope I've explained myself simply there, what is a very complex subject, but that appears to be what's going on. I thought that I was liaising with some people in a UFO craft regarding a breeding program in line with a New Zealand contactee called Alec Newald, and I thought that that was what was going on, but I'm not sure now. I think I'm brave enough and man enough to admit that I haven't got a clue what's going on, Mike, now. All I know is that I'm now getting battered night and day. I've got the UFO objects coming over, and I've lost all sense of focus with what I was supposed to be doing and why I was doing it, which is probably the whole idea.
Well, I have a have a feeling, Tony, that at the right time, I think you will rise above it. But do you think some of this has to do with your way of really getting involved and becoming noticed, because you have sent, apparently, numerous complaints to the base commander, Colonel Randy Roberts, which I believe is at Menwith Hill. Do you think that you've sort of targeted yourself, in a manner of speaking, by being so open about it?
No, because I think I've been watched from... I think that I have been watched from childhood, from 1970 onwards. It doesn't quite work like that. It's a good shot, is Menwith Hill. It's a good shot. They've got the facilities there, and it's a good shot across the bows. But when you're dealing with compartmentalised national security, no matter how many inquiries you make, even if you were the president, you'd never know you'd never be able to bring these people who did what they did to me with the kind of mind control that they did. You'd never be able to bring them to justice. Menwith Hill, you cannot prove what they've done. You cannot prove that it is them. It was in the middle of severe harassment that I was fighting in all directions. You know, I'm reminded of that guy with the big gun on the third Matrix film fighting off all the machines. I often reflect on that scene in the third Matrix movie where, you know, the machines are coming at him. And that's what I was doing. I was firing in all directions, trying to get a reaction as to what was going on, trying to see what would happen. I mean, I know that I rang a certain establishment up on one night. I was getting heavy, heavy harassment, synthetic telepathy harassment. And so I just picked up the phone to a certain establishment and said a few words. The guy on the other end would have thought I was a bloody freak, but the point was the phone's tapped. So the people who, if they were doing this where I think they were doing it, they would have heard the phone call to the establishment, and it all immediately stopped. It just stopped. And I thought, right, that's a kind of a pointer. It's kind of like a pointer. It can't prove anything, but it was a pointer in the right direction, Mike, as to possibly where it was coming from. I can't say, it cannot be proven. I think that most people who work in that location would be horrified. But there again, the guy working in the next door could be working on mind control projects, which I think there were. I think somebody somewhere in the UK, as part of an intelligence group that's not accountable, was experimenting on me illegally with mind-invasive technology. And that is absolutely sinister in the extreme, because it means that the technology is already present. They just need to introduce it at a later date, which makes it even more frightening. So that is what I think the agenda is. In January 2001, I was subjected to an horrendous attack, 4 a.m, absolutely horrific. It was like a Hitchcock movie, like somebody stabbing you in the brain. And I do believe it was earthbound technology. It was earth kind of military technology. And I thought, I woke up thinking I was going to die. And so it's been absolutely horrendous what these people have been doing. And I think that they've used me as an illegal test guinea pig. Although, unfortunately, it will never be proven. I can't prove it. And no authority on this earth will be able to prove it. Not even the president or the prime minister, who we think are the bastions of power. And the last thing that intelligence organisations want, who are in the public eye at the moment, is for this technology to be, you know, for somebody to step forward and say this technology has been used on me, it'll be a public relations disaster. But I think, Mike, one has to be a man about it and stand one's ground and say, yes, this did happen. You know, I was woken up at 3 and 4 a.m. to go to the toilet by them. You know, I had synthetic telepathy downloaded into me. Synthetic generated to shit the bed, to piss the bed. You know, sound effects. Not funny. Not funny in the extreme. And this is what goes on. And it's absolutely horrendous. And perhaps part of the process of swallowing the red pill, Mike, is to reveal what is going on as part of humanity's awakening. It's a lot. I think humanity's awakening is a far more dirtier war than what we think.
Absolutely, yeah. I have to say to you that in the 70s, when I was working on my own very small magazine, sending out UFO information, messages, etc., there was a period when my phone was tapped, and it's so obvious when they're doing it. Yeah. And I was also visited by arrangement by an SAS officer who alleged that he came from a local army depot and said he was interested in UFOs, etc. But I have to think that his interests went a little bit deeper than that. But I never had any more problems after that.
No, no. There was a guy who came up to me at a conference, Mike, just recently. Okay, he indicated that he'd worked for Special Forces. And I had no reason not to believe him. He seemed to know what he was talking about. He said, yeah, MK Ultra, he said, we used to call it Mike Kilo. He said, which is obviously what it is, MK Ultra, isn't it? The CIA suffix MK. The thing is, what he was telling me was they had a project in the UK that was collecting emotional signatures of people tapping phones. And for example, if somebody was put on hold to the gas board, and the music would be playing down the phone, they'd be getting irate. What the gas board or whatever, what the people didn't know, was that the phone had been tapped so that kind of like the signature, for some reason the brain would get off an emotional signature, the irateness down the phone, it would be measured and kind of like taped and recorded. a bit like Kate Bush's experiment song, isn't it? We were working secretly for the military. Some people say that Kate Bush song, Experiment IV, I think it's called, Experiment 3, is it? Some people would say that that was about mind control. So it was the first time I had heard about this in the UK happening. The UK, however, are probably the most secretive when it comes to mind control technology and keeping it hush. There was a horrendous account of a couple in Kent in the 80s who were bombarded night and day by microwave hum from a strange location near them. And this poor man and woman, they ended up going insane with it all. Every night and every day, low-level hum hitting the house so that they couldn't sleep, they couldn't do anything. The rumour mill reported they were testing some sort of weapon, and it was just horrendous for them. So there is evidence that this technology and the barbarity of government turned on its people does go on. I know, Mike, I've been on the receiving end of it.
Yes.
And all because I had UFO objects coming over my house that I filmed. That's how it all started for me, so I perceive.
Yes. I'm afraid that very much is the case. And strangely enough, a very close friend of mine personally knew Tony Dobbs, and he is another person who I know from what he told me, who was harassed even to the point of having his house literally broken into.
Absolutely. It's a very... The thing is that I think the people who are doing the harassing have not got a clue why they're doing it. They've not got a clue what's really going on up the food chain. And some of us have, and it's very bizarre. For example, I was wondering today, Mike, I don't know what your feelings are on this, airspace in the UK closed, nothing flying, and yet NATO are doing the biggest maritime exercise ever seen, involving ships and, it's being commanded by the French, called Brilliant Mariner. And in reference to Tony Dodd, I couldn't help thinking today about that incident he recorded up in Iceland, where one of the ships went missing due to a UFO incident. And one wonders at the moment, with them doing all these maritime exercises, where these UFO objects will turn up again. And so I'll be keeping my eyes peeled on the internet for any reports.
Absolutely. Now, Tony, what was the incident that you experienced when you were apparently walking back from your gym onto the River Ouse bank at Selby?
Yes, that involved two RAF jets, yeah.
Yeah.
That was to do, Mike, with what had happened was I was stood on the river bank. It was a few months after my severe, severe attack that I had. Stood on the river bank, contemplating life, the universe and everything, and these two jets, they were on routine night flights. They often do around Selby, they fly. And this pilot was flying along, and he'd definitely seen me, stood on the riverbank, and he signalled his lights in sequence, on, off. He was actually signalling to me. The thing what astounded me about this plane, I'm sure it was a Tornado, but it could have been a Harrier, because the thing literally just slowed down as if it was hovering. Now, I know that at low-level speed, Tornadoes have excellent manoeuvrability. I couldn't work out whether I was watching a Harrier or a Tornado because of the way it just slowed down and did its lights at me. And I'm thinking, is that a Harrier at that? I didn't think a Tornado could slow down and manoeuvre like that. But I think they can. I think they're very highly manoeuvrable aircraft. Compelled to... the air went still. It was all quiet around me, and I thought, something's going to happen here. I just feel it. Something's going to happen. So I went up to I just walked onto the farmer's field upon the riverbank. There was an almighty blinding flash in the field. The far aircraft, which was over in the direction of Wistow, he hit his afterburners, and at speed, he went tearing down, tearing across the field at speed. He'd seen something, and when I looked up, we had a UFO and the aircraft flying side by side together over towards the Barbie Way. The UFO was flying right beside it. I've always wanted to meet the pilots involved on that evening. I think someday that I will. But I'd like to chew the fat with them and find out what happened to them on that night. I can see it now, Mike, the UFO and the Tornado side by side flying along. And it was due to this blinding flash of light in a field. And even then, Mike, you're not sure what that's about. You're not sure whether that's UFO-related, military, classified experiment of some description. You just don't know.
Right. Now, do you think generally that most of the unidentified objects are largely genuine sightings of extraterrestrial craft?
Sorry, Mike, just say that again.
Do you think that the majority of what are called unidentified objects are actually extraterrestrial craft?
Yes, I think so, and even more so, I think from accounts I've read, I think that they're actually among us in the high street on some occasions, walking past, you know, and you'd, in the words of Robert Dean, you'd never know, you'd literally never know, human-looking one walk straight past you. And that is absolutely fascinating avenue, Mike, to go down, is that when you talk of the encounters in Italy. I don't know whether you heard about them. They're an Italian village where some human-looking extraterrestrials had taken up residence, I think, down on the coastline, down near the sea, near this village. And I've got the book upstairs, and I was looking at the... called Mass Contacts, it's called. And it's about the Italian this Italian village and the Italian government making contact with human extraterrestrials. And there's a photo, a Polaroid photo of one of these human extraterrestrials projecting, showing that their spirit comes from the heart, and it's therefore, it was actually projecting its spirit, and you could actually see it on the Polaroid, this massive extension of itself. They claimed that they came from a world that was human, but yet spiritual, so it was in between the two. An absolutely fascinating account of human extraterrestrial contact. Absolutely human-looking extraterrestrial contact. Started in about 1934. Just fascinating, Mike, fascinating.
Yes. I've never heard of that one, I must admit. Did you get a description of the
there's ETs? an actual photo. I'm going to have to put it up on my YouTube site. There's an actual photo of one of them called the W-56. He wasn't W-56, but they all called him for some reason W-56. I can't remember the reason why. But they're about 7 foot in height. This bloke was 7 foot in height. But he, you know, he just looked like us. But he was big. Big guy. They just looked like us. But they weren't. And I think what were they concerned about was that the technology they had, they were concerned that in the wrong hands, it would be put to use for destructive purposes by ourselves. This seems to be a constant theme during my contact experiences, you know, the military wanting their technology so they can deliver bombs better, improve weapons better, a theme of violence constantly. You know, the theme of us being violent to each other, it keeps cropping up. But yet there's the abduction scenario as well, Mike, which can't be swept under the carpet. So it's an absolutely fascinating maze to go through. It really is. I know that in Britain there was an account of an SBS officer. I don't know whether it's true, just for fascination, who claimed that he was tasked with taking two people who did not look human off the London Underground, arresting them and detaining them off the London Underground. I know that the SBS are often used when in tricky situations like that rather than the SAS. So there's all these accounts knocking about of human-looking extraterrestrials, you know, here, there and everywhere. And it makes fascinating reading.
Yes. I guess with your interest in UFOs, you must have read a lot about Bob Lazar.
Yes, Area 51. Yes, years ago I read about Bob Lazar. And it's something that I've forgotten. I mean, it's something, Mike, I read that. Yeah, it was to do with, he had a gravity, didn't he? A gravity thing that he discovered. It's not, I don't really know much about him, in all honesty. It was years ago when I looked at his material, but I don't really know much about him.
Well, I mention that because you mentioned Roswell, and I believe you're obviously aware that back engineering goes on.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Indeed so. I mean, what is interesting, if you go back to the theme of Dr. Stephen Greer, with the theme of no hostile action has been ever done by extraterrestrials against human beings. Then if you look at the account of Colonel Philip Corso, who was involved in Roswell, along with a few other people who were involved, if you look at that account of Colonel Corso, he's on camera as saying that the US Army actually knew that human beings were being visited. They actually knew that they were being abducted, and they even knew that they were being implanted. But they wouldn't do anything to stop it, because they were also doing research on what these aliens were doing to people. So yes, they were not going to stop any of this. They were going to take a step back. And of course, there's that famous thing to do with Roswell, isn't there, with AT&T and the American Computing Company and the development of the transistor via IBM. A similar incident, I think, occurred in Russia, where they'd done a similar back engineering thing. And you know, Mike, I can't remember for the life of me what the incident was. They'd got a UFO off a mountain, and the Russians were doing a similar thing. One wonders if there was some sort of back-engineered Cold War race going on to try and develop transistors and all that kind of thing. So I find the story of Roswell fascinating, especially when it links into the UFO air war of 1950, where they were shooting them down out the sky, which was just, I find it absolutely unbelievable. That were the accounts I read there. It was really, really hair-raising.
Yes, indeed. Of course, Roswell by now has been, I think, so well documented, forgetting a moment about all the false reports, and I think there's no doubt at all that they did retrieve a craft with the ET bodies in it.
Yes, yeah. My take on it is, I've often wondered, there's many avenues on it. There's Nick Redfern's take that it was illegal Japanese experimentation on prisoners of war, high-altitude experimentation. And then there's the radars had brought them down, wasn't there? There was that other one. And then, as you say, there's that much evidence now, though. There's too much evidence to say that there was not a crash at Roswell. I think it's all the other stuff that went on in between that fascinates me as well. But Roswell seems to be the definitive starting point as to where UFO incidents have started. When in fact it was actually Mussolini's government who probably kicked off with it all in the 1930s, before they were at war with the Allies, which is also fascinating in itself, because Mussolini had recovered a flying disc, a bit like Roswell, and he was thinking that he was being invaded from Mars, and he was wondering who to align himself with. He took it very seriously. He even brought Marconi involved with it and formed something called the Cabinet RS-33. And they had a disc. And I think probably accounts of disc crashes are probably about 1930 onwards, I would think. They were probably crashing before then, before 47 in Roswell.
Mm. Now, have you ever been contacted by ETs?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I make no apology for it. The ridicule factor's there, the comedy curtain's there, but that's how it all started off. These objects were coming over the house. There is a liaison going on. They're not of this earth. They're not of this time. And that's it. And it's that simple. And people can laugh and say, that's a load of rubbish. But that's what's happening. I mean, that is what's going on. A few months ago, I was stood outside, Mike, and the whole air came alive, just came alive. It was really nice, and it was as if all the stars had just come alive, and something was moving over the right hand side of the house. And you heard a voice out, not inside of you, but outside of you, saying it was nice to see you. And then there was a flash in the sky and gone. And one wonders why you're being put through all this hell for little incidents like that to happen. I often question whether I should just walk away from it all, because you don't know what you're dealing with, Mike. You really don't. I hear a lot of channeling going on with people, and I just can't answer my questions. None of it seems to answer my questions. I seem to be on my own path of learning, and therefore, because of my contact with them, they appear to be harsh teachers, but they're too harsh. In fact, I may have perceived that wrongly. They might not be harsh teachers at all. They might be a foreign military with a military intent, for all I know, or there again, they could be here to teach. at a very high level. The only way I'm going to know that is to have further liaison with them. And to be quite frank, Mike, you've caught me at a point on your radio program where I'm normally bounding with enthusiasm about it, you know.
Yeah.
But to be quite frank, I'm absolutely sick of it. I'm at the end of my tether with them. I don't know why they're here. I don't quite know what they're doing. And the battering of the mind control is just absolutely unbelievable.
Mm. So,
and it makes me very angry.
Who was it who warned you not to go filming?
It was them. It was them, whoever them are. And what happened there, Mike, is I did. I was warned not to go out alone at night and film. In fact, I'm constantly warned not to do that. So I don't anymore. But I didn't listen on that particular night. I didn't listen and was actually attacked up near the riverbank by one of them. It was hovering in the air, about 1,000 feet in the air, just looking at me. It's like a standoff. It was bizarre. We're all taught, Mike, that you know that UFOs are here to save us and help us to the enlightenment and all this kind of thing. But this UFO was looking at me. Staring at me, and I was staring back at it after my camera had jammed. It had come over a few minutes earlier, but it was being very elusive, and I thought I'd be clever and get the best UFO shot ever and all this kind of thing. It didn't work in that way, and the thing attacked me. I'll never forget what happened on that evening. It really did. In fact, I thought it would have enough force to knock me to the ground, but it didn't. But it was quite a sinister event, was that. They're not all sinister, though, Mike. It's not all like that, but that's just one example of what happened.
Right. Now, I'm sure you would agree with me from the evidence that exists that the US government already have their own spacecraft based
yes.
on the back engineering and other information they've got. Now, could it follow that a lot of the problems you have with these craft over here is because they are our own craft, if you like?
It's a good question. That's a very good question, is that one. The problem for me, believe it or not, after having nearly a lifetime of dealing with them, I was watching these balls of light objects, particularly the one that attacked me. And I was watching, and I suddenly realised there was different types of UFO flying around. There was little balls of light, there were orange diamond ones, there was illuminated ones that looked like little illuminated orbs flying about, big triangles, but these illuminated orb things would expand to bigger than what they were, you know. But what I noticed was these little balls of light UFOs that kept turning up 10 a penny were being shooed away. They were being shooed away. And observing them is like something out of David Attenborough's Life on Earth. You were observing them and you're thinking, these balls of light are here, not because they've come to say hello. They're here because they're actually observing what I'm trying to look for. They're actually observing who I'm speaking to. And you're thinking, well, okay, are they a classified black ops craft that I'm looking at? And the thing is, I found that the jigsaw puzzle fitted in very nicely when you looked at the activities of the Third Reich at the end of World War II, and when you looked at the activities of America and Britain in the area of Antarctica in the polar region, and you suddenly discovered that these balls of light were, I feel, I could fit the jigsaw in there, you know, I could say, yeah, that fits. That these things were from the land of the Polar Man, from the land of Admiral Baird, what he saw in Operation High Jump. And there are accounts of former, once again, Special Boat Squadron veterans of the 1940s, men in their 80s who gave testimony on special operations when they were escorted to the Falklands. They had to go to the Falklands. Testimony says that they were played back a radio message from a unit, a British unit, that had been attacked by Germans, but also polar men. And the guy, the veteran, says he'll never forget the scream down the radio of the guy when he says, can you assist? You know, we're being attacked by the Germans and the polar men. These SBS guys were sent out to find out what was going on. And they discovered the strange tunnels and all this kind of thing. And the Americans sent a carrier task group up there under Operation High Jump. And you could see that with Operation High Jump, they returned and had a very bloody nose with damaged aircraft and damaged aircraft carriers. And I think there was Admiral Baird who commented that, I don't know whether the comment's true, that they had flying disc to travel from polar region to pole, from pole to pole they could travel. And so that's what I was looking at, Mike. It's something that's going on that's kept hush, but that activity up on those poles is probably what I was seeing, what I was actually coming at me, because there, it's something I do believe that after World War II, the Third Reich went up there and established themselves up there to this date, as well as in Brazil. So you've got Nazi International, the Fourth Reich, as it were.
Yes.
And that, for me, was the jigsaw puzzle, Mike, that fitted into the hostile UFO category. Hence Dr. Greer's theme, there's been no hostile UFO attacks on the human race. I think that that's part of the jigsaw. The hostile activity is coming from that UFO quarter, from the polar region.
Right. Now, you were able to identify one of the helicopters you saw as an unmarked one, which you said belonged to the Special Forces of NATO.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Fennec. After a bit of research, I contacted James Defence Weekly. I'd been filmed by an unmarked helicopter at the height of the UFO objects coming over my house. And one came over my house. It was an illuminous thing, like something out of the movie The Abyss. Coming over the house, illuminated the TV antenna, went back again, you know, that sort of thing. And the phone was ringing at the house with all kinds of spooky phone calls and being followed in pubs and just crazy. And obviously this unmarked helicopter appeared from nowhere. I'll never forget it. I was just walking over the local canal bridge and the bloody thing just appeared. I don't know how they did it, but it was hovering. It was as if it had been doing... It wasn't obviously like that, but it was as if it was waiting for it was as if it was a tank killing helicopter waiting for a tank to appear on the plane or whatever. It just appeared over the roof. And I'm thinking, my God, that's a green unmarked helicopter hovering looking at me. And then it did a circle and I filmed it and they filmed me. And it was a Fennec AS555, which is a Eurocopter made by, I think it's made by Eurocopter. And it's on issue to Special Forces in America, Canada, I think Brazil and a few others. But as far as we're aware, the UK don't use that helicopter. UK Special Forces don't use it. And a Lynx helicopter pilot took a look at it. And he said what he was intrigued by was the sliding door, conversion to a sliding door, which these Special Forces choppers have. But he said that there was a service winch on it, which was highly unusual. The thing had a winch on the side of it as well. It also had cameras, so it was definitely there for observation purposes. And I know that in that same year, there was another helicopter came circling the garden. When I play back the footage, there are two UFOs, orb type, going right over the top of the helicopter. So there's a constant theme of them turning up as if to point out something, as if to drop a hint at something, as if to warn at something. And this appears to be what's going on. They're continually turning up to drop a hint. I don't know what the hint is. It's as if I'm holding a deck of cards and I don't know what they are, but somebody else does. And so it seems to be, that this seems to be the constant theme, Mike, of this warning, this constant theme coming up from them, that we are being warned about what we're doing, where we're going, not dictated to, but warned. Because obviously I think these people who can obviously see far more ahead than what the human race can to the direction we're going down. And I think that therefore disclosure is very, very important indeed. Very important.
Right. Now with your interest, do you follow anyone else's messages that they get from ET, say for example Sheldon Neidl?
So for example who, sorry?
A Sheldon Neidl who...
No, I follow. All my experiences run parallel to astronauts like the Soviet cosmonauts and the other guy, the American ones, but mainly the experiences of Soviet cosmonauts match mine. Of course, I've done all that research. I've tried to find something that would match my experiences, and the nearest match I could get was that. There's a lot of people who channel, and there's a lot of people who channel all that, and it doesn't answer my questions, so I don't bother to look at that material. I don't feel that I can learn from it. I'm in an extreme situation, and the comments, the comments that they would make if they were channeling, they might be real. I really don't know. It's not for me to judge, but it's not helpful to me.
Right. What is it you think that you know that maybe other parties don't want you to give out? Is it the fact that you know real spaceships exist and you had a contact with them?
In all honesty, Mike, I don't know. I'd like to say, yes, I know. I'd like to say, you know, I know what's going on. And at the moment, I'm at a stage in my life with all this where I ain't got a clue. I thought that I did. I thought that I knew what was going on, and I have not got a clue. I've lost all direction and focus as to what's going on with it all. I really have. I've no idea what's happening. And I'd like to say that I have, but I really haven't. All I know is that I've probably been somewhere, done something, and put back again, and I have no memory of it. And I don't know why. I don't know why there's all this activity, all this heavy, heavy activity around me. And that's kind of like probably the saddest part of the story, really, because it disappoints me. Because I'd like to sit with one of these ETs from one of these UFOs and learn about their world, you know, listen to their elders, listen to their stories. I'd like to hear their folklore. It seems to be all being prevented from happening, or it may have already happened. It's a curious kind of Alice in Wonderland tale, Mike, it really is.
Yes. So if you've actually been aboard the ships and met some of these space beings, what you're saying is you have no waking memory of it.
Yeah, but this is it. What they do is something called screen memories, where they'll put what you think is a memory of an event, and it could be something entirely different. I know a few weeks back, a few months ago, I was absolutely mentally exhausted, and I remember falling asleep and being lifted out of my body. At first, I thought I'd died, but I hadn't, and I thought, my God, I'm out of my body. And then you hear this familiar kind of R2-D2, to give an example, it isn't R2-D2, but it's a familiar sounding, quirking, clacking sound of a foreign language that is not of this earth, you know, and you're definitely, you're definitely on board a ship, and I think that's happened on a couple of occasions now, unbeknown to me, where you're definitely on board something. And it all seems to gear around the prevention of humanity developing. And it all seems to gear around the prevention of humanity hurting itself. And it's as if we've got two groups battling away at each other, for whatever reason, to prevent humanity or to help humanity to awaken. And this is the puzzle with it, Mike, for me, that this is the real puzzle. You'd have thought that enlightened beings in these UFOs would know better in some cases to do what they do, but they don't seem to. They don't seem to be they just seem to be as bad as human beings sometimes, I feel, when you hear about the cattle mutilations in the UK and all that goes on there. And it seems to me that they seem to be as bad as human beings, if not worse. And that disappoints me greatly. It deeply disappoints me. And it's probably, Mike, a phase that I'm going through. Ask me in 12 months' time if I came on your programme again, I might be totally different. It's just a phase that I'm going through where I'm very cynical of what I see. And absolutely at the end of my tether with it all.
Right. Do you believe, as some people do, which includes me actually, that we're in a spiritual awakening that is going to lead to an upliftment by the end of 2012?
By the what, sorry? By the...
By the
sorry,
end
Mike,
of 2012.
Sorry, Mike, I just missed that. By the...
Yeah, okay. I was asking you, since you believe in a spiritual awakening, whether you believe that will in fact be happening by the end of 2012. It will be an ascension.
No. If anybody thinks that's going to happen and there's going to be an ascension, they've got a rude awakening coming, that the human race, I feel, will fall flat on its backside and lift itself up again. It'll learn the hard way. Before it evolves any further. What is a concern is the forces that are behind the scenes, which we do not see, which are very ancient forces that have been on Earth for centuries, that are hell-bent on preventing humanity from awakening. And that is indeed a very serious matter. That's why the issue of disclosure is so important, because it alters the direction of our future. It steers us out of harm's way. It changes a time event, and I think that's why it is so important to go for disclosure. And I think that Probably 2012 is more about the issue of dealing with disclosure than it is about an ascension. I think it's the big awakening for mankind to realise they're not alone in the universe, I would like to think.
Well, it certainly appears to be a very important time. Do you actually believe in sort of God and the Creator or something of that nature?
I do, absolutely. I mean, I do believe in a supreme cosmic force. I do believe that some of us are channelers for it, and I do believe that that force can be manipulated either for good or for bad. I certainly do. I do believe in a supreme force, and I do believe that when push comes to shove, in a very adult and mature way, it will direct mankind to an ascension, but not yet, not in 2012. I think we're too young, Mike. I think we're too young at the moment for all this. I really do. I don't think the planet is fully connected to an ascension when you've got psychotic countries like China and North Korea, what the UFO occupants have given reference to. They've given reference to these countries, which is very interesting in the course of my experiences, that these are the countries that do need to be watched. I think that there's a possibility that through one of these countries this force of negativity could manifest. And that's why, once again, it's very important that the world has to come together and learn to live with each other, or we will be in great trouble, in great peril.
What did you think of the? What do you think, rather, of the French who actually announced their belief in UFOs? And I believe they set aside an area where they invited them to land.
Yes, indeed, didn't they? Was that a gentleman who built an embassy, Mike? Is that correct?
I don't know the details, but I'm aware of the incident where they announced it and professed their belief in UFOs, or should we say ETs, yes.
All right. Just a moment, Mike, because a member of the family has decided just to leave the television on at full blast. I will just need to turn it off. I won't be a minute.
Thank you, Ryan.
Sorry about that, Mike. That was very loud. Would you like to ask me that question again? Are you still there, Mike?
Yes, I'm here, yeah.
Would you like to just to ask that question again?
If I can remember what I asked you, I will. Forget that just for a moment. It may come back to me. Have you heard of the Illuminati?
Yes. Yes, most definitely. I do strongly believe that I was targeted by the Illuminati. Illuminati are of course the Illuminated, although members of the Illuminati, some of our more human people who are involved with the Illuminati would not have a clue what it is they represent or what the ultimate kind of food chain is of the Illuminati. It's a very clever system. You've got to hand it to the intelligence that created the secret societies and created the kind of the secret gestures that surround us that are hidden in plain view. You know, they're put in plain view, but we do not see. It's a very clever system of control.
Right. Now, we're having such an interesting time, as usual. Time flies by, Tony. Now, one thing I'd like to ask you about is, I did send out your website link.
Yes.
And people reported back to me that it's not actually completely up and running. Now, I assume it's being refurbished. Will that be ready?
It's not ready. It's not ready at the moment, Mike. As I say, I'm having an horrendous time at the moment with with mind control and mental exhaustion, and I'm having a job on. The YouTube site is actually available, and that gets many hits on it. It's a big YouTube site that I've got with all the clips, all the radio interviews, all the speeches that I've done, and that really is worth a look, and that's called Tony Ops UFO.
Say that again.
That's Tony, T-O-N-Y, O-P-S, UFO.
Tony Tops at UFO.
That's it.
Have I got that right?
Yes, it's Tony. That's T-O-N-Y, O-P-S, UFO.
Tony Ops. Right, got it now, I think. Okay, because some people will be interested, I think, to follow this up. It's very kind of you to come on to the program. I don't get too many out-and-out UFO people, but I will need to announce to my listeners that next week, I'm in fact interviewing Sheldon Nidal, who is a Galactic Federation representative, and he is very well known for his weekly message from them. So I know that will attract a lot of interest. Well, Tony, I hope you get over your problems, and I'm sure somewhere down the line you're doing a terrific lot of good work in what you're doing by investigating these things. And
I think to be a true bringer of the light, Mike, you have to be prepared to take the hammer that comes with it. And
yes.
To be a true light worker, the hammer will come your way, you know, and you have to take the rough with the smooth. And I think
Absolutely.
Probably 12 months down the line, things might be different.
Yes. Well, maybe I'll have to check with you in months to come.
Please
and see
do.
What's developed. But thanks again for coming onto the programme. We'll have to leave it at that, Tony.
All right, mate. Well, thank you very much, Mike, and I hope to appear again for you.
Thank you. It's been very
All right, mate. Thank you very much. Bye.
Thank you. Right, well, thank you, everyone, for being with me today. I'm sure that was interesting. So hope to speak to you next week with Sheldon Nidal. God bless you all. Thank you.